We call the meeting to order, we do have a quorum, so Representative Gutwell has looked at the minutes and would like to move the minutes. So all those in favor of the minutes as written, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Minutes are done. Okay. And I want to apologize for being a little late today. I'm having one of those senior moments. I came down here early and forgot something up in my office. So I tried to get here and get this thing going on time. And today we're going to have a presentation of the Office of Legislative Auditor concerning oversight of the Workers' Compensation Report. And we have the Legislative Auditor, Jim Nobles, Deborah Parker Janone, and Commissioner Steve Swiggin with us today. So let's jump right on in, and welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the tape.
Thank you very much. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the Legislative Auditor, and with me at the table is Deborah Janone. And Mr. Chairman, first I want to thank you very much for this opportunity to present to you and your committee our report on the oversight of workers' compensation. Certainly, as members of this committee know, workers' compensation is insurance coverage that is required and regulated by the state. It is a program designed to get workers back to work as quickly as possible when they have suffered a work-related injury or illness. Workers' compensation, then, is obviously important to individual workers and their families. But I think we also need to understand that workers' compensation is also important to maintaining stable businesses and a productive economy. Therefore, having a well-functioning workers' compensation system is a common interest. It is a place where management and labor, as well as the public and private sectors, need to come together and work together for a good system. The Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry is the principal state agency responsible for ensuring that our workers' compensation system is working well. First, the department needs to make sure that those businesses that are required to carry workers' compensation insurance are actually doing so. Second, the department needs to ensure that insurance companies are processing and paying claims quickly and appropriately. Third, when there are disputes, the department needs to provide methods of resolution that are fair and as expeditious as possible. Overall, we found that Minnesota's workers' compensation system is working well, but we also found room for improvement. For example, we think the department needs to do a better job of ensuring that businesses are carrying workers' compensation insurance, and we think that the state's dispute resolution process needs to be reformed and simplified. Some of these improvements can occur by the action of the Department of Labor and Industry, but others will require your support and your action. I want to note, Mr. Chairman and members, that throughout our evaluation, we received full and complete cooperation from the Department of Labor and Industry. And I want to thank Commissioner Swiggin and his staff for all of their help. I also want to say that we very much appreciate Commissioner Swiggin's receptivity to our findings and recommendations. And we've enjoyed working with him and look forward to continuing that relationship towards implementation of the recommendations that we've made. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to call on Deborah Janod, who was the manager of our evaluation, to make a brief presentation. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. Welcome to the committee, and please identify yourself for the tape. And
thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I am Deborah Janot, manager with the Legislative Auditor's Office. And thank you very much for having us here this morning. Before I get started, I would like to acknowledge the terrific analytical work of two members of the evaluation team that are here with me, Sarah Roberts and Dan Jacobson. Their analysis is really at the heart of this evaluation. Let me start with just a quick overview of some background information. As Mr. Noble said, workers' comp is a form of insurance regulated by the state and required by the state. Coverage is required of virtually all employers in Minnesota, including those in the public sector and the private sector. There are some exceptions in state law, for example, family farms and sole proprietors, but nearly all employers must have workers' compensation insurance. There were about 127,000 work comp policies written in 2007, and another 1,200 employers or so are registered as self-insured for workers' compensation. Benefits go to employees for work-related injuries or illness. And an injury can be anything that's caused, aggravated, or accelerated by employment. So this includes traumatic injuries, gradual injuries like carpal tunnel, and also occupational diseases. The key goals, again, in addition to providing compensation to injured workers, is to get the injured worker as close to their physical recovery as possible in terms of the pre-injury, you know, the pre-injury health, so getting them physically recovered and back to work in economic circumstances as close as possible to their pre-injury economic circumstances. Workers' comp is a big system. There were about 120,000 claims filed in 2007. And the benefit costs associated with those claims are estimated to be about $952 million, the big system. Nearly all of the day-to-day responsibility for workers' compensation is in the hands of the insurers, the employers, and the workers who file the claim. The state really only gets involved in certain specific areas. The claims that they tend to get involved with and have some actual oversight responsibility are claims associated with more serious injuries. They're called indemnity claims. They involve more than 3 days of lost time from work, a permanent impairment that resulted from the injury. So they deal, you know, more actively with that subset of claims, and most of the data that we're talking about this morning relates to that group. They said the state has a number of different oversight responsibilities, but for our evaluation, we focused really on four key areas. The first is how well does the Department of Labor and Industry ensure that employers have workers' compensation coverage as mandated? How successful are they at obtaining repayment from uninsured employers when benefits have been paid to their workers on their behalf? We also took a look at day-to-day or kind of routine monitoring of the claims processing and benefits payment oversight that they do. Again, this is related to that subset of claims that have to be reported to the department. And finally, one of those areas where the state has a much more active role in workers' compensation is dispute resolution, in providing various avenues and vehicles for helping insurers, employers, and employees resolve disputes. So I'm going to run through our findings in each of these key areas, and I think in particular, Mr. Chair, you were interested in the first two and the last. So I'll spend a little bit more time on that.
And Ms. Janad, if just for people's members, for our convenience, if you have pages that are in your report so that we could somewhat follow along, if you bring them up, that'll make it simpler for us.
I've got them all tabbed and color-coded, Mr. Chair. I'm ready.
So do I.
All right. Let me turn to that first area of state responsibility, and that is Dolly's ability to hold employers accountable for having coverage as required. For this function, the department has a small team of investigators who will do all different kinds of investigative activities to find out if employers have coverage that they're supposed to. Their primary source of leads is a list that they get each month that shows employers who have dropped workers' compensation insurance coverage for lack of premium payment. So it's a pretty good start for investigations, but that's the primary source. One issue that we identified is that the department's team of investigators has declined in number. In 2000, they had 6.5 staff doing these investigations and completed about 700. In 2007, they had 4.5 staff and completed fewer than 300 investigations. And as that staffing went down, the length of time between when they got these leads on dropped insurance policies and when they did the investigations was growing. And it's, you know, as many points, it was more than 2 years from the information to when the investigation actually took place. The department's been able to make only limited use of automated data matching in doing these investigations. And by automated data matching, one of the key things that we're talking about is the ability to match with unemployment insurance data. As you know, most employers in Minnesota, if they need to have workers' compensation coverage, they also need to be registered for the unemployment insurance. So we think it would be a good idea to be able to do some automated data matching to hit the workers' compensation employers against that D database to see if there are some that are registered for unemployment that aren't in workers' comp. So we make a recommendation related to that. The department also issues penalties for failure to insure. And here I will, Mr. Chair, refer you to page 34 of the report while we're talking about failure to insure penalties. Employers that have had a period of lapsed coverage can be penalized of up to $1,000 per employee per week uninsured. And then that amount can be adjusted by various situational multipliers, for example, if it was willful or unintentional noncompliance. And so there's some detail in Table 2.5 about how these penalties are initially developed. But in the end, the department ends up negotiating, as they can get more information from noncompliant employers, they'll negotiate a final penalty amount. What we couldn't tell from the data is how that negotiated penalty final amount lined up with what was really appropriate or not. Like, what were the reasons that the amount went down? If you look at Figure 2.4, it shows the white bars show the initial penalty that was assessed when the investigator did the initial investigation. The black bars show the final penalty amount. And there's very legitimate reasons why those would often go down, as the employer is able to provide accurate information about their employees. But we weren't able to tease out how many were good reductions, you know, in that sense, and how many where we couldn't tell why the penalty was reduced. If you then flip over to page 37, table 2.6 shows the total penalties assessed for failure to insure. That's in the first column. It's about $11 million over 10 years. And then as you look toward the right, here's the status of collection activity on those cases. So about 35% of that amount, over, again, this is for 10 years worth of penalties, about 35% has been collected, 12% was written off, and another 50% of the penalty amounts are still out there for collection. So, and some of that may be in payment plans, but it's not a huge proportion. So let me turn now to the department's activities related to the Special Compensation Fund. As you know, when the Special Compensation Fund is a specific state fund, the revenues for it come from insurers and self-insured employers. They get assessed, that money goes into the Special Compensation Fund. The Department of Labor and Industry is tasked with paying benefits to injured workers when their employers are uninsured. So that claim would go to labor and industry. It would do all of the normal, just like an insurer, processing that claim, determining compensability, and then would pay benefits for that worker out of the Special Compensation Fund. From 1998 to 2007, there were about 1,200 claims paid from the Special Compensation Fund with benefits of about $28 million. So then the department has a responsibility to recoup that money from the uninsured employers. And they are to get back from those employers the amount of benefits paid from the Special Compensation Fund plus a 65% penalty. So they should be recouping 165% of the benefits that had been paid on their behalf. That's just that out. Our ability to assess top-to-bottom accountability in this area was severely limited by the record-keeping associated with it. The billing records were incomplete. Data on the claims paid from the Special Compensation Fund are in one information system over here. the records and information about the employers, the reimbursement arrangements of those employers, was in a system over here. And matching those two is difficult. We were able to do it through a lot of really great data matching and cleanup, but the department doesn't systematically do that to track how much went out, how much is coming back relative to that. So, but for those that we were able to build a record, 38% of those claims had a record of a reimbursement arrangement. The rest we couldn't find. There may have been other arrangements, but 38% of them, he found a record of a reimbursement arrangement. Bringing those dollars in the door was very difficult. Over the 10 years, again, for those records where we had information, known repayments were about 17% of benefits that were paid out. I did have Sarah Roberts put together kind of a cheat sheet. This should have been in your packet just this morning.
We have a question from one of the members, Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman and Mr. Nod, this is such an important point. I wanted to just ask for some clarification on the reimbursement rates. How many of the companies that were found to, or that we had to do special compensation or pay from our compensation fund, how many of those companies actually disappeared, went away, went out of business? Were you able to track that at all? And is that a factor in this 38% paid and you can't find the rest? Are they gone?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, yes, that is a factor. Some of those are no longer viable businesses, so that would be a part of the story, definitely. Do we have information on how often that happens? Getting the data? We weren't able to track the situation involved in that.
Well, Mr. Chairman, it was such a glaring number. I had a hunch that might be it. Mm-hmm. Maybe we can talk a little more about that after the presentation's over.
Madam Chair, Representative Beard, I think in the report it pretty much breaks it out to about a third, and a third. Okay. So,
there is some additional information if you have more interest about how this breaks down and the claims, where we were able to pull together the data. It's here for your reference. The department has been more aggressive in this area since 2003. So when we looked at the information and the data, again, we did it over a 10-year period, but there are indications that the department was more aggressive in seeking reimbursement. Used to be that they settled for pennies on the dollar for many of these claims. They have done a better job of seeking and getting a lot closer to the 100% reimbursement on benefits paid. But less so on the 165%. But they also have plans in place for improving their information systems, which I think will really help in this area. But overall, we think there's definite need for improved accountability in this regard. The next area we looked at was monitoring of compliance with claims processing rules. Again, these are for those indemnity claims that also get reported to the department. And here, they have a fairly comprehensive procedure, we think. The computers perform automated screening using a lot of different algorithms as these claim documents come in the door. So, for example, they can check that if an injury were reported, does a form indicating that there was a determination of liability appear in the record, 2 weeks later when it's attached. So there are many, many different algorithms used in this computer screening. When that screening identifies an anomaly or claims a certain situation, for example, very serious injury, those claims get kicked to auditors at the Department of Labor and Industry, and they review the entire claim. They're checking the math. They're checking to make sure that the rules were applied correctly in determining benefits, timing of benefits, that kind of thing. And then there are other staff there as well who review claims for a penalty assessment if it looks like the penalty, for example, for late payment of benefits might apply. We did think that the department could take some opportunities, or we identified some opportunities where they could do some more intense compliance monitoring. And let me give you an example of what I mean by that. We determined that, for example, 25% of claims that were denied within 14 days that's how long an insurer has to deny. 25% of claims denied in 2006 in that way eventually had benefits paid on them. Now, to us, this calls into question how appropriate were those initial denials. There could be very legitimate reasons the insurer got new information that would then say, oh, fine, you know, we're going to pay these benefits, and they'll go ahead and do so. But it also could be evidence of poor investigation on the part of the insurer. It also could be evidence of willful denial on the part of the insurer. So we recommend that the department do some more in-depth research to really understand what's going on here. If they do have a systemic issue with denials, then there could be compliance programs, education efforts with insurers that could be targeted at what those problems are. And finally, dispute resolution. That's the last main area of our evaluation, chapter 3 in the report. We're going to go over the details in this area. A dispute in workers' comp can be a disagreement over a wide variety of issues, basically any aspect of a claim. It can be a dispute over primary liability, whether the insurer has determined that it's a compensable injury. It can be a dispute over medical services. For example, can I have an MRI on my shoulder injury? And it can be a dispute over discontinuance of benefits. If the insurer has said we're going to discontinue paying wage replacement benefits, for example. Overall, we found the dispute resolution process to be overly complex, litigious, and a source of frustration to many who participate in it. I'll refer you now to page 55 in the report, figure 3.1. This is actually a fairly simplified version of what the state's dispute resolution process looks like. Its task depends on the form that's used to file the dispute, the nature of the dispute, willingness of parties to negotiate, whether they detour into mediation, for example. And jurisdiction is split between the Department of Labor and Industry and the Office of Administrative Hearings. We surveyed thousands of claimants in Minnesota as part of our evaluation. And in general, they were pretty satisfied with how the system works. They reported that, you know, they had their injury, they filed their claim, they got their benefits. Overall, they were pretty satisfied, except for one group of respondents that were particularly and very much opposite dissatisfied. And those were claimants who had a dispute involved in the dispute resolution system. And in fact, it was clear that some individuals are just lost and overwhelmed. My name was on the thousands of surveys as a contact person, and I received dozens and dozens of calls from people just desperate for help. You know, maybe their problem was related to unrealistic expectations on their part. You know, I don't know that, but it was very clear to me that there are individual workers out there in Minnesota who are trying to interact with the system and are having a really hard time with it. For some insight, on, you know, what kind of models might we look at for improving Minnesota's dispute resolution system, we took a really close look at an alternate system. It's called the Union Construction Workers' Compensation Program. State law allows employer and union in an industry in Minnesota to establish through collective bargaining their own alternate workers' comp system. They have to follow many of the same rules. All the benefits are still the same between the state and the union system. But this union system established its own dispute resolution system. And if you take a look at one, figure 3.2, this is the dispute resolution process for the union construction program. It's simple and it's linear, and all of the disputes basically go through the same set of steps and in the same order. That's page 61, figure 3.2. We did some analytical work comparing benefit costs the change in program. And in fact, the union benefit costs associated with claims under the union construction program were lower than comparable construction claims in the state system. I think largely because workers are getting back to work faster under the union dispute resolution system. So we think there are some good ideas and it's a model for us to try to make changes.
Just a moment. So you're saying that the union does it better than the department? All right, we don't have to answer.
So we think there's some lessons learned here, and it's a good model for moving forward, and I'm not touching any more of that. You had asked for just a little bit of additional information, and if I could find my seat. What do we know about disputes? And I'll refer you to page 51. This little table that tells the percentage of indemnity claims, and again, these are the claims of more serious injuries reported to the Department of Labor and Industry. The rate of dispute has been going up. In 1997, about 15% of claims had a dispute of some sort associated with it. That had gone up to about 19%, so one in five in 2007 had a dispute associated with it. If you just look over to the left page, there's some description if you wanted about the various dispute types. So it's actually referred to the form dispute. There can be a medical issue in a claim petition dispute or in a medical request dispute, but they track by form in essence. So that's what we have here. So the rate had been going up. We don't know much about the outcomes of those disputes, since, for example, who was it decided in favor of the employee or the employer. The department might be able to provide some information if they've been doing a little tracking on that, but they didn't provide that to us. But we do have some information, if you're interested, on the duration of disputes. How long does it take to get through this system? And there's information on page 58 and page 59 of the report. This is considered, these are rough estimates. The data on all of the disputes in the system are very, very complicated, and it's pretty hard to put a trail together. But these are decent, but consider them rough estimates. Let me just point you to, let's go to table 3.6, claim petitions. These claim petitions are disputes, about 40% of disputes are a claim petition kind of dispute. They all go to the Office of Administrative Hearings, and what you see here is that about 56% get resolved in alternative dispute resolution processes, and another 22% went to a hearing before a workers' compensation judge, and there was another 22% where the status was pending and we didn't quite know where those were in the process. But if your dispute or complaint petition was resolved in a settlement conference, an administrative conference, it took about 7 months for that to happen. For those that couldn't be resolved that way and went on to a workers' compensation judge, it's about 11 months to get it resolved. So those are the longest. But again, that may account for about 40% of disputes in the system. If you take a look at table 3.7, these data are more specific to the Department of Labor and Industry. These are medical disputes, so they would be filed on a medical request form and generally involve services under $7,500 in medical service. Those get routed to the Department of Labor and Industry for alternative dispute resolution. About 87% of the issues, the disputes that went to them in that way, were resolved at the department. About 10% couldn't be resolved, and they went to Office of Administrative Hearings for hearings with the workers' compensation judge. And so about 10% of the cases that happened. So those resolved at Department of Labor and Industry, that was about 87%, took about a month. For those that went to a hearing, again, 10% of the cases, the duration was about 5 months. So again, it speaks to a lot of different experiences in the system based on where you go, how willing the parties are to settle, and which way it gets routed through dispute. I think that's pretty much it with the extra some detail and disputes. I can answer more questions if you have those. But let me just close with some of the recommendations that we made. Most of the recommendations from the report go to the Department of Labor and Industry, suggesting that they do more to enforce mandatory coverage laws, improve their data and procedures for collecting those reimbursements from employers when benefits have been paid on their behalf, to work with the Office of Administrative Hearings to streamline the dispute resolution process, and also to take some steps to facilitate broader use of that union construction model. One specific recommendation is that they study and perhaps work up a proposal on how that model might be applied to Minnesota as an employer with the state's unionized workforce. We have one specific recommendation to the legislature, and that is to establish an ombudsperson for injured workers. Minnesota has ombudsperson offices for the Department of Revenue. It's the taxpayer advocate. They're ombudspeople for mental health, managed care, long-term care, associated with the Department of Human Services. And again, as I can personally attest, having, I think, served in this function for a few months, is there's a real need for some Minnesotans to get a little extra assistance in problem solving with attention being paid from their point of view. The Department of Labor and Industry needs to be very careful. I mean, they must be impartial in the dispute resolution process. And so there's only so far, you know, that they can go. And this ombudsperson we envision operating outside of the workers' compensation division, so there's a separation there. So it would be able to provide some assistance from the workers' point of view in problem solving. We also found many of our findings related to issues in the department's information systems to improve accountability and the effectiveness of their ability to administer the system. You know, we would ask for legislative support for some of the information system upgrades that they have planned or are in process now. Although our specific recommendation, as I said, went to labor and industry to take a look at how this union construction model might be applied to Minnesota as an employer, it would be a good time, I think, for the legislature to start thinking about whether they would support that kind of change. And then finally, as always, we task you with following up and ensuring that the Department of Labor and Industry implements the recommendations that we've made to them. So with that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Members, how about if we let the department, could you leave your recommendations up there and allow the department a chance to respond to the recommendations? I did see where the commissioner was, his comment was pretty much spot on, and we need to work on it. So it's refreshing in government to see someone admit and move on and try and fix things. So if the commissioner would care to come up.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair.
Don't go too far, because I'm sure there will be questions.
All right, I'll be right here.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Good morning, Mr. Commissioner.
Steve Smigham, Commissioner of Labor and Industry, for the record, Mr. Chairman. And I have with me Assistant Commissioner Patricia Todd, who handles the Workers' Compensation Division. Would you just like me to make some comments, some reactions, Mr. Chairman, and then maybe take questions?
Yes, that'd be just fine. I mean, if you care to respond to the recommendations or just make comments, that's just fine. You, the Assistant Commissioner for Day-to-Day Operations, wants to make comments however you want. I want to tell you,
if Commissioner, okay, Mr. Chairman, I will make some comments, and then we'll use the Assistant Commissioner for any questions you have, so we have the right.
Well, I will say this, having read the report, many of the problems, most of the data comes from 2007, and I don't believe you took the position until that particular year, so it seems to be an awful lot of your, falls into your predecessor's lap. Unfortunately, it falls to you to try to fix the other issues. So, with that, go ahead.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It falls somewhat to me, somewhat to us, because the legislature will be involved in any changes as well. Mr. Chairman, a quick down and dirty statement. The department and myself as commissioner are in harmony, almost complete harmony with the legislative auditor and his report. Mr. Nobles and his staff have done a very, very good job in analyzing the workers' compensation system, some of the problems, some of the barriers, some of the changes, and specifically and most importantly, recommendations to be made to the department and to the legislature to make this system work better for what we consider our two most important stakeholders, that be the injured worker and the business that pays the premium. We are in harmony. There is not conflict. Mr. Chairman, having said that, sometimes the changes are not as easy as just saying we're in harmony and we'd like to do that, because it does involve the legislature, it does involve a council, a workers' compensation council, it does involve many other stakeholders as well. But we are in harmony, and we will do administratively what we can from DLI to make sure that at least those recommendations that can be made administratively will be followed through upon. Mr. Chairman, let me try to first give you some assurance as members of the legislature. After being there for a year and a half, I've had the opportunity to go throughout the Workers' Compensation Division, be with every unit. I've met almost with every one of the 120 employees, is it, in the Workers' Compensation Division, and certainly I haven't met with all of them, but many of them. And I want to give you the assurance that they're very, very good people. Very good people with the mission of serving the injured worker and the business that pays the premium at heart. They are performance orientated. We have a very, very good staff at DLI in the Workers' Compensation Division. And I just give you some comfort that you have good people working for you there. I want to make sure that you know that and that you understand that. I think I will start with a couple of the questions that were here in committee, and then maybe go on to some of the recommendations. I think Representative Beard asked the first question amongst the committee, and it had to do with the uninsured claims. Representative Beard, you are correct that sometimes, while we need to get much better as a department, recovering 17 cents of a dollar is wrong and inappropriate, and we will do better. And we will do better as we get more ITS systems to allow us to do more monitoring. As we improve our systems, we will be better. But Mr. Beard, you are correct that sometimes squeezing blood from a turnip is not an easy thing to do. In many cases, these uninsured persons claims, we go back, even though it is a delayed back. The businesses are not there; they're out of business. They've gone bankrupt. They're no longer in operation, so Representative Beard, you are correct. It is a difficult task and many times to go back and get money from people who are no longer in business and no longer in existence. I think one thing that I would mention in regards to the amount of money, just for all of you to place in perspective, because sometimes as you make policy decisions, it's important to put things in perspective. This is a $1.7 billion system per year. $1.7 billion. Now, I want you to put that in context with the numbers that we need to collect from uninsured claims. Was about $2 to $3 million a year, and that I think the number was $28 million over 10 years. That it would be about $17 billion system over 10 years. For the 28 million of uninsured claims. We need to be much better at getting that money back because if we don't get it to the persons who ought to have been carrying insurance, it falls upon others in the system because we have to make an assessment so claims will be paid. Show the importance of collecting those claims. I want to put it in perspective that it's $1.7 billion, it's $2 to $3 million a year, and just for that perspective. The recommendations, Mr. Chairman, that you see at the end of the book, I think it's toward the last pages, we again will try within DLI, within the capabilities we have of both our administration, our staff limitations, as you did hear from the legislative auditor, We do have less staff now than we did 10 years ago. And so that is, you know, it's tough to do as much investigation enforcement when you have less people. And I think in the one area we've gone from 6.5 people to 4.5 people. Mm-hmm. From 2 to 4.5 people in the investigation of uninsured claims. So it does cause us a problem. But we will do what we can. We're trying to increase our monitoring, computer monitoring of claims. We are currently in stage 2 of a 4-stage ITS project, which will help us very, very significantly when we finish that by the end of the year, Assistant Commissioner.
Sure.
They've been given the directive that this ITS project that will help us in our monitoring claims will be finished by this year's end. And also, we are spending significant monies to continue the implementation of our data-driven workers' comp system, by the way, which is a model around the country. And that will also help us in both the processing and the monitoring of the claims. Mr. Chairman, we're in harmony, and I will leave it at that at this point.
Did the Assistant Commissioner have anything that she wanted to add at the moment, or would you like me to open it to questions?
Either way, if you'd like to know what we're doing on those specific recommendations, I can respond to some of those that are open for questions. Otherwise,
I'm going
to
give you a chance to be specific on or respond to those recommendations, because most of my questions come to that. I'm sure other people have those same premise for them. Representative Winkler?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just, I guess, to the Commissioner or the Deputy Commissioner. You talked about the decline in staffing for investigations, and from 6.5 to 4.5 is a third, roughly, broad term. But I'm looking at figure 2.5 in the audit report on page 40. And in 2000, you had 400 cases that were assigned within 2 years, that policy cancellation, and you went down to, well, I don't know, it looks like maybe 40 in 2007, which would be about a 90% decrease. I don't understand why going from 6.5 to 4.5 employees would lead to that kind of major change in the investigation.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Winkler, if it's okay, I think maybe what I'll do is I'll refer to the Assistant Commissioner to answer that.
Thank you.
Both those dates preceded me.
Mr. Chair and Representative, that deals specifically with one specific information set that we receive in, and that's specifically related to the delay in one specific item of where we're finding uninsured employers. So that has to do with a data organization called MWCIA, which is one of our areas that we have been utilizing to find uninsured employers. So that's why that explains that. It's not all of the mandatory coverage investigations that we do perform. We have been increasing in our overall mandatory coverage investigations. One of the things that we've been looking at doing as our resources decrease is to start identifying industries that are more likely to not have coverage of workers' compensation. Some of them typically could be construction. There were some damage that happened in a couple of cities across the state, as you guys well know. And we worked with the city councils in those specific areas and asked for the names of contractors who had applied for work in those specific cities, and then we verified whether or not they did or did not have insurance. And we found quite a few who didn't. So we utilized that method to be able to identify people. We've also looked at, again, common industries that we know more people are likely to not have insurance, and that's where we've been trying to focus our efforts. And that's how come I think it indicates in the report too that we've increased in regard to the percentage of mandatory coverage claims that are investigated where they actually prove to not have coverage. So we've increased that because of the fact that we don't have as many resources. We've tried to optimize the resources that we have.
Okay. Can I jump in here? I think I'm the chair. I'm going to do that.
You don't have to use that expression about your prerogative.
I'm confused here, to be honest. I'm on page 40. I'm looking at 2004. It's right in the auditor's report that due to staff reductions, DLI did not investigate any lapsed insurance policy crate cases in 2004. And it gets to one of my concerns. And I would ask you to respond to the statement in here that you got 2 years before you get to do an investigation, and if you read into the report, and by law, after 2 years you can't fine anybody. I mean, they're off the hook. If I'm an employer and I don't have insurance, and I get away with it for 2 years, it's kind of like, well, okay, I get away with it for a long time. So that's a concern for me, and that comes right back to the staffing. If you read the report around a couple pages ahead and a couple pages behind, it always comes back to the staffing levels having dropped by 3 or 4 staff persons directly related to the 2003 budget cuts. Sure looks like that to me. And my question is then in 2005, 6, and 7, you still didn't hit the numbers on getting those investigations done before the 2 years. That's the question in there. How do you want to respond to that one?
Mr. Chair, as the Commissioner indicated, we clearly have areas that we need to improve within the agency. And I think as indicated in this report, you can tell there are a significant number of comments scattered within this report that talks about the significant improvements that the Department of Labor and Industry has been making in some of these areas. And we've been trying very diligently to be able to utilize the resources in the best manner. I think you could indicate on page 41 that it says, after we completed the analysis, DLI informed us that as of January 2009, it had significantly decreased the backlog of those cases, and according to the department staff, we were under a year. So all cases that we are looking at are under a year. And then I would anticipate your next question will be, well, why does it take a year? And my response to that is that the data source that we utilize, the MWCIA, which again just tells us people who canceled their insurance. That's only one aspect of what we get, and it's the canceled insurance. And so there are time frames in the statute that requires cancellation of insurance within a certain time, and then there's coverage for employees within a certain period of time through their lags of 60 or 90 days, so different things like that. So normally, until those time frames are done, we really can't determine if they do or do not have insurance until typically 6 to 9 months after we obtain the data. And that's how come when we look at what we're trying to do, and the legislative report indicated that too, that source of data isn't really the best source of data. That's the source of data that says these are employers who canceled their insurance. They previously had insurance. They no longer have insurance. What we need to also focus our resources on are to find the individuals who are out there who never had insurance. Because that, to me, is really one of our biggest focuses. Because at least, you know, there are people out there who have never had workers' compensation insurance. And that's how come we're trying to focus our resources on these, because these are of importance, but again, also in the areas where we know it, by statistics, it's more likely that those industries do not have workers' compensation insurance.
But the report, it also says that the simplest recommendation is to cross-reference your data across with the Department of Economic Employment and Economic Development.
Correct.
And can you tell the committee where you are at getting to that particular point? Because it's certainly, it's something that I said to the past commissioner, why don't you start doing cross-references with deed and with the Department of Revenue, and I never got an answer from him. Maybe you can give me an answer as to why you're not doing the cross-references, because I did check, and it is not a data privacy concern.
Mr. Chair, no, I agree. It is not a data privacy concern at all. The biggest issue is, and it talks about it on page 42 as well as other pages, the only way we can do it right now is to manually go through the list of new employers that are identified at Deed and manually search another database to determine whether or not they do or do not have workers' compensation insurance. That's the only option that is available right now for the department to utilize to find those individuals.
Well, it also says in your report that you had someone doing that until 2007 when they left. Demonstrably, they went down. The number went down. Did you make an attempt to assign anyone to continue that particular work?
We don't have the resources to be able to continue to do it manually.
Overworked and underpaid government people. I'm going to go talk to that on the blog.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not going to. Maybe the assistant commissioner was going to finish.
Oh, no, that's right.
Okay. I guess the connecting question here to me is putting resources towards personnel and staff who may be able to provide some additional investigation cross-reference work versus the IT upgrade that you're talking about. And, you know, I don't know. This is not a finance committee, Mr. Chair. So I would say, what is the relative weight in a non-dollar amount between adding staff to perform some of these services versus adding an IT upgrade, which may or may not solve the problem if you don't have the right kind of process internally to manage it well. So what's the interplay between those two things?
Mr. Chair, Representative, right now in the Workers' Compensation Division budget, approximately 90% of our budget is utilized for salaries. And we have a small, 10% of the budget that is not used, approximately. Okay, I can go back and get the actual numbers. But approximately a small percentage that is not utilized for specific salary expenses, because that's the biggest expense in agencies overall. What we've been doing is, as the commissioner indicated, we started a data-driven initiative quite a few years back, and what we've been trying to do is to work with the IT group and identify priorities to be able to start fixing some of these issues. But this is not something that we're allocating a great deal of money towards, because we don't have any great deal of money to allocate toward it. And I believe at the last biennium cycle, it wasn't this one, it was the last one, we actually had a change item that came through and was approved specifically by the legislators to allow us to have carryover $125,000 so we could continue to spend money in the IT area.
Hello? Mr. Chair, I guess we can't ask finance questions, but I'm just wondering, is the current budget recommendation likely to make these matters better or worse?
Mr. Chair, Representative, at this time, the Department of Labor and Industry is extremely fortunate because we are funded out of a mechanism that is not general fund dollars. We are funded out of assessments that insurers and employers pay. And as such, the governor's budget did not indicate any cuts in the base funding for the workers' compensation unit going into the two next biennium.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just give a response to his question. First of all, members and Mr. Chairman, I want you to put in perspective that we do need to get better, but as far as the MWCIA cases that come to us, we've cut that backlog in about half, I believe, recently in the last month. We've cut it in about half. And as the assistant commissioner mentioned, that's one of the pools that we get from the standpoint of uninsured cases, uninsured coverage. There are other pools, and when you look at the various pools, you know, some pools have more fish in them than other pools, and you want to go fishing where there's more fish, right? Where you have the opportunity to catch more fish. And the assessment within the department is that we have better opportunities to catch fish here than in the MWCIA pool that was given to us as far as going to uninsured workers. So, you know, place that in perspective. Mr. Winkler, Representative Winkler, in relationship to judging or assessing the cost-benefit of staff versus the ICS project or the data-driven workers' comp project, I think we need to do both, but I think that we have significant upside, significant possibilities to improve and efficiently improve our system by finishing the ICS project, which will be completed by the end of this year and allow us to do much better monitoring. No?
One portion of one project.
One portion of one project
this year. And that portion of that project relates to auditing and increasing auditing in the area. There's another, you know, what we're doing is we're trying to identify on a list of however many what are our biggest problems, and we're trying to be able to fix those problems based on which ones are the biggest ones and which ones have the most impact to our stakeholders. The first one that the commissioner talked about is the audit one. The next one, which will link these two systems, which is something that the legislative auditor indicated as being a problem, is that we don't know really what percentage we're collecting because the two systems don't talk to each other. That's the second project after we're done with the first, with the one that we're doing now. That's the project we have planned after that.
Mr. Chairman, my expectations were too great. We will have the first project done within this year, where we are in the second phase of four phases.
Mr. Commissioner, you've had expectations levels for many years that I've known you, and some we've met, some as all of ours fall flat. Could the Assistant Commissioner, do you have a date for when your IT system will be, I don't want to say state of the art, but meet up to these recommendations? I mean, is it, obviously it's not next month, but a couple of years out, 3 years out? And the second question then is, how do you fund this IT upgrade? Is it from the Workers' Compensation Fund?
Mr. Chair, first question is, how long is it going to take? Right now, we've been doing the data-driven workers' compensation system since 2007, and we're in probably the third or fourth project that we've started in there. One of our first projects was to implement a system where we don't have to have people give their social security number. We don't have to search everything by the social security number. We put in what's called a worker ID number so we can have more privacy. We've done some other things relative to that. But right now, we have the one project that we're doing with deals with auditing. Then we have a requirements document right now that's going into the second phase, which deals with the items that are listed in here to track that data. That will probably, based on talking to the IT group, probably take us 3 to 6 months with our present workload to be able to complete that. Then what we have to do is we have a large project that really needs to be done within our system, which right now, with the funding and where we are at now, will take 6 to 9 months to do after that. And once those 6 to 9 months are completed, then we'll be able to do more of the other items to be able to bring us further along. So, and as for how they're funded, Department of Labor and Industries IT department is funded through an indirect rate that's charged to all units within the Department of Labor and Industry. So we have the Workers' Compensation Unit, we have the OSHA unit, we have CCLD. That's how it's funded, is through the number of staff percentage based on those specific operational units. What the Workers' Compensation Division has been doing since 2006 is we've been more aggressive in regards to decreasing our operational money that's not tied to labor in order to continue to fund additional IT staff specifically related to the things we want to do. And those dollars have been to be able to fund an additional position to be able to move the projects that we have identified through. Did that answer both all the questions?
Yes, it did. Representative Beard, do you have a question?
I had several. A couple of them have been answered already in listening to the discussion. This has been good. However, maybe something to help for a little more perspective or give us some background for either of you, Commissioners. Workman's compensation insurance is required to be carried by any employer in the state of Minnesota. I used to carry it. We actually buy it from private companies, I understand. How many companies write on workman's compensation insurance in Minnesota?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, I think we probably have approximately 800. Now, there are some very, very large ones. The largest being SFM has about 14% of the market. And then there are some very, very small ones that maybe only have a coverage or two. And that also then would include those who are self-insured. The agenda would also include, we have a very substantial self-insured program out there too. So a lot of the larger maybe businesses in the state, General Mills, 3M, Mayo, they're probably in the self-insured category. So if you add them all together, the big ones, the ones that sell one policy and the self-insured, you probably get about 800.
Mr. Chair, thinking about this, using this pool, I think it's called MWCIA, and I know that's only a small part of what you do, but it seems to have attracted some attention here. When a policy lapses or is canceled, I think in our case, in the eight or 9 years I carried insurance on my employees, I think there was once where we shopped and changed carriers, closed one policy, opened another. I assume that somebody in your department must have gotten a letter from the aggrieved carrier that we dropped. But I don't recall because I didn't handle it directly. Is there a process where the next company can notify you that, in this case, Beard Communications, you get a flag that we lapsed the policy, but the next guy says, oh, but they bought one from us? Or did somebody, would they have called us? I mean, it's not that we ever went without coverage, but I'm trying to think about satisfying the auditor's concern here. How does that work, or can it work? Is there a way in the, as the, another phase of your system comes into play, that this can be seamless? One company just notifies you that they picked up the new policy, things like that, because our employee identification number never changed, so you would know us by that.
Mr. Chair, Representative, that's the data we do receive from the MWCIA, is data specifically related to that. When people cancel and when people get new insurance,
new comes through too. Okay,
and we, that's what we look at to be able to evaluate people's changes in coverage.
Thanks.
Representative Hilton?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Commissioner or Assistant Commissioners, one of the recommendations of the legislative auditor that has not been mentioned yet in your response is recommendation to establish an ombudsperson. You want to address that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, it was a recommendation of the legislative auditor, that is correct. It was also part of a recommendation made by the Commissioner to the Workers' Compensation Advisory Council last fall, previous to even knowing the legislative auditor recommendation. Mr. Chairman, Representative Hilty, not being politically correct all the time, my words to the Council were these, that if we can afford to have an ombudsman for inmates at correctional facilities, in other words, the not politically correct term was that I used was if I can we can afford a society to have an ombudsman for bad guys, we can afford to have an ombudsman for injured workers. Representative Hilty, it is not being recommended by the council right now at this time. And as you know, we have a process of a Workers' Compensation Advisory Council that needs to come together to make recommendations to you. They're good people. They have met as of Monday, but they did not follow through with this recommendation as well as a few others. And it's, but we stand behind our council. They're good people and do it in the best interest of the state for the injured workers. I don't know what else I can add other than that. We think it should be done on a legislative basis in law, because I believe it was Mr. Nobles that mentioned that it's very important for our department to be seen as impartial. We have to be impartial between the business that pays the premium and the injured worker. We have to be seen as impartial, and we think that that should be done legislatively, as, by the way, all the other ombudsmen are done legislatively, as opposed to the department creating the position.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have one follow-up question first to Mr. Representative Beard's comments. Are workers' compensation insurers required to be in-state insurers, or can you buy compensation, workers' compensation insurance out of state?
Chair Representative, you can purchase it out of state.
Okay. Then the main line of my question for you deals with the dispute resolution recommendations from the OLA, and I'll confess I'm more familiar with the dispute resolution processes that is being used for unemployment insurance, and that's a more streamlined version, I think, than what is being used currently under the workers' comp dispute resolution process. But one of my concerns has always been with the deed version of this dispute is that sometimes the same decision maker taking the input in, doing the appeal, or taking the initial input in and making a decision, then doing the hearing, making a decision, then deciding whether their decision was right or wrong, and then that's the final decision that has to be appealed up. So could you please tell me how the system works currently now, if the same players are making the decisions steps along the way through the early assistance where you're in there just saying, is this really a valid claim, and then on to mediation and so forth, and how you, since you seem to be in harmony with the idea of streamlining it, how you would perceive the program working down the line.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I'm just trying to find the note that's in here that talks about what we've done. There, we do presently have, I believe it indicates in here, 14 individuals initially who handle the incoming calls. And what we do is we dedicate resources to ensure that every call is answered for some workers who call in, as well as employers, as well as insurers, to answer questions in regard to those specific items. And that group of individuals who just answer questions also hold some of the conferences to be able to determine whether or not the dispute to be heard, you know, whether it to be resolved or not resolved. Once it's at our department and it's decided that it can't be resolved after one of those first meetings with that one individual, then they're transferred to the Office of Administrative Hearing, and those are heard by a different individual.
Carlos?
Yes, please. And so when because there's an administrative conference at the OAH as well, so under the current system, if it's not something that can be handled easily, which then BLI would take care of the easy ones, and if it's actually going to be a contested dispute, it's sent over to the Office of Administrative Hearings. Is that, am I understanding that correctly?
Mr. Chair, Representative, not necessarily. I think that you can tell from the page that that was highlighted to the individual 55. A lot depends on, it's a very complex system. And what we've been trying to do, and talk a little bit about it later on, that what we've been trying to do is to change our internal processes to make it easier so people can navigate through the system. So right now, and that's with a certain type of dispute, they go through the Department of Labor and Industry. If it's a different kind of dispute, they'll go over to the Office of Administrative Hearing.
Okay. Mr. Chair,
I'll look right ahead.
If the streamlining proposal from the OLJ is to use the Carpenter Union model, I guess, and that is very, I would say, a lot more similar, I would guess, to the deed model that's being used already. And so is that a place you're willing to go? And if you are, would that be something that that would be handled by DLI, or something that you would expect the whole system would shift over to the Office of Administrative Hearings?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Oldham-Miller, I will try to address this if you'd allow me to at this point. First of all, our system of contested hearings, dispute resolution, should be made much simpler for the injured worker, without question. To aid the injured worker, one thing we can do administratively within our department is we are in the process right now, of creating a DVD for the injured worker that he or she will receive the minute we get notice of an injury, to help them walk through the process that we do have. That DVD will be completed by June of this year, and I think it will be a great addition, a great add to the ease at which an injured worker will be able to go through the process. Secondly, Representative Obermuller, I had the opportunity last year when first appointed to sit in with some injured workers as they went through the process. I went through the dispute resolutions. I looked at the process, who's being tossed where. I kind of went upstairs with a few more gray hairs, went into the commissioner's office and said, work with OAH to make this process simpler. It's got to be made more simple, more direct, more timely. She has worked to her credit with Judge Krause, who I believe is here someplace at OAH, over the past months to make recommendations extremely similar to what were recommended to us by Mr. Nobles and his staff. We wanted to enhance, and we wanted to follow and make it simpler, and certainly learn from the Union Construction Worker Program, which has been referenced a couple of times. At this point, I cannot tell you that we will be able to go in that direction.
Commissioner, I think Ms. Janad had a comment. Did you have? No. Okay. Well, I'll be pretty clear. I think people on both sides of this issue have not had the from the workers' compensation board have not had the best interests of the workers at heart. And if they don't have something that streamlines this by next year, I'll write it and I'll break the taboo of bringing it to this Capitol without their authorization. I will. I will not have injured workers getting the short end of the stick. So I have friends on both sides of the issue in that particular council, and I'll have them both mad at me.
Equally.
And I don't really care, because every summer, I go, every non-session, I go out and I get really dirty and I work really, really hard, and I see a lot of people get hurt, and I have a lot of friends. I have a lot of guys that were in my day school class 30 years ago who cannot pick up a pipe wrench and cannot make a living today, and it is premised on some of our worker compensation problems that they've had. And I will not hold the account, I won't say here that it's the department's fault. I think it's out of your hands, but I will take it in my hands and put a bill together and take the heat for bypassing that commission. And I don't think any of my friends will like me by the time I'm done with it. So,
Mr. Chairman, can I just for one second give a great compliment to Judge Krause and OAH for their willingness to work with our department to come up with a more streamlined, more efficient process? And I think Judge Krause should be recognized for that, as whenever you are willing to change something, as you know, as a reform, there are some who I'm sure he's taken a couple of arrows in his back for even being willing to speak with us about a more simple process, more efficient process. And then, Mr. Chairman, just out of curiosity and fun and tongue-in-cheek, you mentioned working dirty this summer. Have you kept your license up?
I have.
You did?
I had to go online at 2 a.m. in the morning to do my license.
Just recently that.
But I have it in my pocket.
Okay. I hope you take that with the degree of fun that I meant it as.
I do. I did.
Thanks. I just want to make one final comment then, and it relates back to what you're saying. I think this DVD is a great idea, and I applaud that effort because a lot of what these systems are, especially as I see, I do some pro bono work in the deed side of this system as they're on appeals, and certainly with talking to people who've been through the, you know, frustrating experiences with the workers' compensation dispute resolution thing, they're already injured and they're frustrated with that process that they can't keep working and they just can't get back to normal. And then the system feels like it ties them down and makes the matters that much worse. And so thinking about how to make the system feel more fair, that, you know, the system brings people through it and they get to the end and they go, well, I didn't get what I wanted, or I did get what I wanted, but at least I know the process worked properly, is the key. And I applaud the effort you're making on that front, and also with the judge to do that as well. So that's something to keep in mind as you think about the streamlining, is to make sure the system actually feels fair. We have all the technical pieces in place, but it's got to feel fair too at the end. Thank you.
Commissioner, I don't see any other questions. I'm going to adjourn here in a moment, but I will hopefully in several months from now, say 6 or 8 months from now, sit down with you on these recommendations so I can figure out where you are with them. And I think you do a good job there, and I'd like to see how you are and how you've progressed in 6 months. But Representative Winkler?
Never mind.
Mr. Chairman, the recommendations that can be done administratively without legislative action and can be also done within budget, because the Assistant Commissioner does have a budget she has to deal with, will be done.
Thank you. Members, we are adjourned.